Hey, good morning. We'll get started now. So, last time we were discussing the design of cellular systems, and the basic idea is that we want sort of complete coverage of some large area, and we have sort of a limited bandwidth in which to produce that coverage. And so we rely on the properties of, I shouldn't just say free space loss, but loss for wireless radio transmission to say that if we keep base stations far enough apart, then they won't interfere with each other, or they will sort of interfere with each other only at an acceptable level. And so then we looked at how we could design a cellular system sort of based on these sorts of ideas. Okay. And we made a few simplifying assumptions. We assumed that all systems were transmitting at the same power level, and indeed we are assuming that, however, the power decreases with distance is uniform across the system. Okay. And then we assumed that we could arrange our base stations in some regular pattern. And, again, in real life, due to terrain considerations and other considerations, pretty much none of those assumptions will hold completely. But the basic principles of how these things are arranged are there. Okay, so what we require then is that our signal to interference ratio, so the level at which sort of the ratio of the desired power strength of the desired signal to, again, the interference from all of these other stations at a distance, which are using the same frequency, we require that to be at some acceptable level. Okay. And so the results that we got then were that the ratio of the reuse distance, so the distance apart of two stations using the minimum distance apart of two stations using the same channel set, and the cell radius fixed the geometry of the problem. And in particular, it fixed the number of cells in a cluster. So the number of cells over which we have to spread our channel set. Okay, and again, that is given the reuse distance and the cell radius, that's just a geometry problem. We then noted or derived results saying that the ratio of the reuse distance to cell radius was related to the signal interference ratio. So if you have some requirements for the signal interference ratio, that's going to put restrictions on your reuse distance to cell radius ratio. Okay. And therefore, ultimately, your signal to interference ratio determines the size of your cell cluster and the number of channels per cell. Okay, Okay. So, we now have a system which has a number of channels available to the users. And so we're going to look at two more topics before we move on off sort of basics of cellular systems and look at some details of how actual cellular systems work. And so our first topic is traffic engineering. And the idea of that, again, is that if you have a number of channels, you don't need a one-to-one correspondence between channels and users because users do not always make telephone calls. They don't spend their life on the phone. So in general, you can have more users accommodated than you would have channels. And so the issue with this, of course, is that you have a worst case scenario where all of a sudden all of the users decide they do want to make a phone call at the same time. And in that case, not all of them will be able to. So what traffic engineering does is it examines how many users, what their behavior is, so how frequently, sort of statistically, do they want to make calls, and relates that to the number of channels you have available and the probability of blocking, so the probability that at any given time a user won't be able to complete their call. Okay. And so these results have been around for 100 years, roughly. They were originally applied to sort of wired telephony networks. And we're going to examine how they can be used for cellular networks. After that, we will look at techniques we can use to increase the capacity of the system. So either share out the channels in a way that accommodates the users better, or indeed eke out more channels for the users to use. So, at the moment, we're going to assume that any cell has a fixed number of channels. Again, when we look at channel capacity and tricks for increasing that, some of the tricks say that, well, that's not the best option. And again, we're going to assume that we have some number of users in, let's say, in one cell. And because users aren't using their phones all the time, you probably don't need to provide one channel per user. Okay. Now, if you have more users than channels, again, it is possible that they will all decide to use that they want to use their phones at the same time, and there will be a problem. But we're going to look at the trade-off between the number of users with certain behaviors, the number of channels, and the probability that we won't have sufficient numbers of channels. Okay. And so, again, the theory that we're looking at has been around for 100 years. It was developed by Agner Erlang for the telephony networks. And we're just going to sort of apply it as is here. Now, for this module, we're just going to sort of state the results and use these results. If you're a master's student, you might have taken 509, in which case you've had some crack at deriving these results, and you've had a little bit more of a look at why they do and don't apply to cellular systems. If you're a fourth year, well, if you go on to fifth year, you'll look at these in greater depth. Okay. So, central to this, to these results, is the notion of traffic intensity, and this somehow characterizes the behavior of the users and the requirements of the users in terms of resources. Or, actually, it doesn't quite do that. It models the behavior of the users. Okay. So, our first definition of traffic intensity, A, is that it's the measure of channel use, or the average relative channel occupancy, and that's expressed in a unit called an Erlang. And there are sort of three ways we can look at this traffic intensity. Okay. Now the first one is if we observe our channels, take a sample of our channels, then it's the average number of simultaneously busy channels. Okay. Our second definition is that that's the ratio between the sum of busy times of the channel and the observation time. So that's essentially just another way of averaging, sort of getting the channel utilization. And then the third one, which again brings it back to the users, is that it's the average number of calls that are requested during the period of a single call. Okay. And so that's the one that's probably a little less obvious. But again, you can think that if you sort of, again, pin everything down to a single call, then that gives you the average number of calls that you'll have at any given time. Okay. So, in mathematical terms, we have two parameters that are going to determine the amount of load in the system. The first is lambda, the mean rate of calls attempted per unit time. So that's, if you've done queuing, that's the arrival rate. And H is the holding time of a successful call. Okay. And so if you go for the third definition of traffic intensity, then that's lambda H. Okay. And that's also, you can arrive at that through Little's law as well. Okay. And so, interpreting this A then, Again, it's a normalized version of lambda. It's the number of calls to arrive while a single call is going on. And one airline then would keep a single channel busy. Okay. And alternatively, again, we can relate it to the number of channels and the utilization of the channels. So if we have n channels and rho is the amount of time that the system overall is busy, then A is also rho n. Okay. Now, as an example, suppose we have 20 calls per minute, so that's our call rate, and the average holding time for a call is 3 minutes, then that means that in the time that we make 1 3-minute call, on average, 60 calls are attempted. Okay. And so our traffic intensity then is 60 airlines. And so we might ask, well, what capacity do we need for the system? And the answer is, well, we don't know exactly. You have an idea that you need at least 60 channels. Because it seems that on average, you know, you'd have at least 60 calls going on. So less than 60 is going to be too few. Greater than sort of 60 exactly would fully utilize the system. But again, these things are all statistical. It's not like everything's sort of happening periodically and we can predict when it happens. So due to the fluctuations, there would definitely be times that not all of the people could be accommodated. But 60 is an average, so if 70 people chose to make a call instead, that, you know, you'd have a problem. So, you know, you can keep increasing your number of channels. You could double the number of channels. And again, likely this would be good in terms of allowing users to make their calls. You'd have to have sort of double the average number in order for them to run into problems. But again, you're reducing your system utilization, so you're having resources at the ready when they're not likely to be used. So what you want is to have some trade-off between sort of having a reasonable system utilization and a reasonable likelihood that people actually will be able to make their calls. So how do we determine the capacity that we need in a system? Well, usually we try to estimate some worst case traffic intensity. And so as the day goes on, you can observe the utilization of the system and observe that at certain points in time, typically we look at a busy hour, then we have the most calls. And so you estimate the usage during this busy hour, and then you provision for not sort of the absolute worst case, but a reasonable amount during this busy hour. Okay. And after that, you then try to determine, again, what's the likelihood of a blocked call? Okay. So again, we try to cater for a reasonable amount of usage that does not let out sort of unusually intense usage. So it's not accounting for the absolute maximum amount of traffic. Now, in wired systems, again, it's these days very unusual to experience any sort of blockage, because you know, they just have thrown enough capacity at the system. They've laid down big enough wires that there's rarely a problem. In wireless systems, again, with the limitations on sort of channel availability, you still will experience blockage. So, trunking refers to the allocation of a number of links, which is going to be less than the actual number of subscribers. Okay. And typically when we deal with cellular systems, the link has to be in the form of a pair, so you have an uplink and a downlink channel required. Okay. Now, since you have less links than you have users, there is some probability of blocking in the system. And what we'll do is use our Erlang's result to determine what that probability of blocking is, or vice versa, we'll fix a probability of blocking and determine how many channels we actually need in the system to give us that probability of blocking based on what we know about the user behavior. Okay. And so again, these refer to the result that we're going to use is Erlang's formula, which relates these three things. It relates the system load, the behavior of the user, that is, the blocking probability, and the number of channels. Just to put it into context, this is what's called a lost call cleared system, which means that if your call can't get through, you don't go on hold, you just, you know, sort of, you're cut off. Okay, and the specific formula we'll use is the Erlang B formula. The probability of blocking is referred to as the grade of service. So again, from the telephony company's perspective, it wants to provide on average, a certain quality of service, and that's measured by how likely it is to block. Okay. You know, typical values for grade of service are usually somewhere between 0.001 and 0.01. Okay. Now, again, I'm not even going to go through the Erlang B formula, except to note that it relates our three quantities,
the offered A, the offered traffic, N, the number of channels, and P, the probability of blocking. Okay. And typically what we'll see is that the airline B results are either summarized as a table or a graph. So you have two of these probabilities on the axis, and then you pull out a curve with the third. But you could directly calculate it if you wanted. So if you go onto the internet, you'll see Erlang B calculators as well. Okay, and what we'll see here in the slides is a graph, and I think when I post the tutorial problems, I've given you a table, so either way. Okay, so just to note, the Erlang B formula is derived making a number of assumptions. Again, you'll have gone through these in gory detail in EE-509 if you took that. Or if you're going to take it, you will. So we assume that the behavior of the users has a quite specific form. It's Poisson distributed in terms of the requests to connect, and then the duration of the connection is exponentially distributed. Okay. And so we assume that there's some fixed finite number of channels and an infinite number of users then. Okay. And so again, for our purposes, what we want to do is sort of just use this result. And so we will be given plots or tables, again, relating these three quantities, and we'll sort of examine systems based on that. And so, again, this is a typical plot. So we have our traffic intensity on the x-axis here. We have our probability of blocking or our grade of service on the y-axis. And then each of these lines represents the trunking or the number of channels available. Okay. And sort of unsurprisingly, if you fix traffic intensity, then the less channels you have, the higher your probability of blocking. Fix a probability of blocking, then the greater number of channels you have, the greater traffic intensity you can deal with. Okay. So, in general, again, you just want to read these sorts of values off. You could be given that you have four channels and you want a traffic intensity of one, for instance, and that would give you a probability of blocking falling roughly here, which is about 0.004, say. Now, in wired systems, we just say, well, we have a certain number of channels, or we want to know how many channels we have. There are some subtleties in cellular systems in that we've seen that we can split up the channels in different ways. Okay, so we can have smaller cells or larger cells, etc. So, our first observation is that large capacity systems, so systems with more channels in them, are more efficient than small capacity systems in giving a grade of service. And so what we mean by that is, an example, suppose we have two cells with a capacity of 10 channels each versus one cell with a capacity of 20 channels. So all in all, you have the same number of channels, but in one case they're sort of split up half and half, and in the other case they're just one big pool. And so we can ask ourselves for a fixed grade of service, what traffic intensity can these handle? Okay, so we've picked a grade of service of 0.002 here. And what we can see is that, again, if we look at our 10-channel curve and bring it down to where we have our grade of service of 0.002, then your traffic intensity is about 3.4. Okay. And you have two lots of those, so between the two lots of those, they can handle 6.8 traffic intensity. On the other hand, if we have 20 channels, then we drop it down, and our traffic intensity is about 10. So 6.8 versus 10. And again, if you think about that, that intuitively that makes sense. If you've divided your channels into two lots, you could have people sort of in one area waiting for a channel, whereas there might be a channel free in the other area, in the other cell. So it's not completely efficient use of the channels. If you have one big lot, then obviously as long as there's a channel free, it can be allocated. Okay. Our second observation is that large capacity systems are more sensitive to increase in traffic. Okay, so by that we mean that you have to have, it takes less of a percentage increase in traffic to sort of affect the grade of service. Okay. And so here, if we look at a cell with 10 channels, we saw that we had a grade of service, a grade of service of 0.002 led to 3.4 airlines of traffic. If we want to go to 0.01, we now, again, following the same sorry, let me just have a look there. Okay, following our same number of channels down, the 10 channels, then we see we now have a traffic intensity of 4.4, or a 30% increase
in traffic intensity is necessary to get that sort of a change. On the other hand, if we have 70 channels, so we're following this curve down now, then we have a 4.002, we have a traffic intensity of 51, and 4.01, we have a traffic intensity of 56, and so that's roughly a 10% increase in traffic intensity versus our 30% increase will give us the same decrease in traffic blocking. Okay, 11%. Okay, so you can see there are trade-offs between sort of, again, higher capacity cells and smaller, lower capacity cells as well. Okay. Now, one thing that we have sort of ducked when doing this sort of analysis is the mobility of the users. So we've looked at a cell and we've assumed that when somebody wants to make a call, they remain within the cell for the duration of the call. But we know that that's not actually the case. We know that as users are on the move, then handover comes into play and users move from one cell to another. And so this affects the statistics. And again, in 509, you'll take a look at sort of how that happens. Here, we won't. We'll just note that it's not quite as simple as we are making it out to be. The arrivals are now a combination of new calls and handovers, so arrivals from other cells, and call completions. Either, again, a call is genuinely completed, the user hangs up, or the user just moves into another cell. And so that's going to affect, within a given cell, that's going to affect the call holding time. So the behavior is a bit more complex than we've been making it out to be. Okay. And so this, typically, if you want that sort of level of detail, then you would move to a simulation model. Again, you'd have within each cell your basic behavior, but then again, you could see what happens when as people move. Okay. So that gives us a way of studying the capacity that we need in a system. And that's going to have an impact then on, again, how you lay out cells. Because basically the way you can change the number of users in a cell is by changing the size of a cell. So roughly, if you think of users as being sort of uniformly distributed, then the smaller the cell, the smaller number of users you have. Okay. Now, the number of channels in the cell is going to be limited by things like signal interference ratio, but if you shrink the size of the cell, you can get it down to somewhere where you don't have too many users per cell. Okay. So, again, I'll post some homework problems, some tutorial problems that will let you see how that all works and how those things trade off against each other. Our final topic is increasing capacity. And so again, we've assumed this layout for our cellular system where we have our base stations at at uniform intervals, and sort of everything sort of flowed from that. And so we're going to now look at a number of sort of tricks of the trade for, that's, you know, again, just a very theoretical level, for increasing the capacity in the system, so for accommodating more users in the system. And the two ways we can do this essentially is we can change the architecture of the system, so we can in some way change the way our base stations are laid out or something about the base stations, or we can again look at swapping around channels within the system. And so if the usage of the system is not uniform, then you can try and allocate more channels in more heavily used areas. Okay. And so we can look sort of both within the cell and sort of overall within a network. Within a cell, we can add new channels if the channels were not all initially in use, or we can try and borrow channels from adjacent cells which are not as congested. Okay. And so those are sort of channel allocation policies. We can also, again, change the configuration of our networks. Three ways of doing this would be cell splitting. And so, again, you can decrease the size of the cells. So you subdivide congested cells into smaller cells, each of which sort of, again, is running at a lower power and therefore can sort of allocate the channels sort of in a sort of mini cellular system. We can use cell sectoring, which is the idea of using directed antennas now and allocating the channels according to these directed antennas. And the benefit of cell sectoring is that you're going to reduce the amount of interference, signal to interference ratio within the system. And finally, providing microcells, so having smaller than average cells, and also sort of changing the configuration of the antennas again to reduce interference. Okay. And so overall, we can, and then sort of globally, we can look at sort of dynamic channel assignments. So again, assign channels to congested portions of the network. And in CDMA, a technique called cell breathing is used, which again has you borrowing channels from other adjacent cells. Okay, so if we look at channel assignment methods, we have fixed assignment methods, so with the cells within the so the channels within the cell are fixed, and again, what we've looked at so far is the fixed at the beginning. We can then look at
ways of reality, or with the basic pattern of allocation, we can look at ways of reallocating the channels within the cells. Again, if certain portions are more congested, they get more channels than others. Okay. At the other extreme, this can be done dynamically, so every time a call is made, sort of the channel picture is assessed, and sort of channels are reallocated within the system. That's tough. And you can have a sort of flexible system in between, where you have a portion of fixed channels and then a portion that's allocable sort of on the fly. Okay. So, again, our basic strategy would be a fixed assignment method. And in that case, connection can be set up only if a channel is available. And that works fine if your sort of, again, usage is fairly uniform. But if traffic varies through the network, then it's not necessarily the most efficient. Okay. Now, again, the simplest non-fixed strategy would be, the simplest sort of addition to that would be simple borrowing. And here, you can borrow channels from neighboring cells if all of the channels are occupied. And so somebody then has to track within a cluster who is using what channels. Okay, so it's not that the decision is now cell by cell, but it's sort of a group of cells now is allocated the channels, and somebody has to track that. Okay. So, borrowing works well at sort of a certain demand level, but above a certain demand level, then you run into problems again with mobility and, a certain channel has been borrowed by one cell, and then everybody moves to the next cell, and the channels are not available there then. So at some point, you can actually have a degradation of utilization because just the cells, the channels have been moved sort of to the wrong places. Okay, for hybrid channel assignment then, the channels are divided into two categories, one set that can't be borrowed and one which can. And with borrowing with ordering, then how many channels are in either category can change with time. Okay. So in all of those, there's somebody keeping track of who has what channels in what cells. With dynamic schemes, no channels are permanently assigned to cells. The channels are then assigned on a call-by-call basis. When you make a call, somebody decides, usually the mobile switching center, what channel is available. Okay. And obviously this is complicated to implement, and again, can lead to higher signal interference. Flexible strategies try and sort of find a halfway house between fixed and dynamic assignments. And so again, here, each cell is going to have some channels available to it for allocation, and then the remaining channels are assigned to cells based on traffic intensity. Okay, and that can change as the day goes by. Okay, and again, just call by call assignments, slides out of order, is problematic in that it gets, again, you can get into the non-optimal channel assignments. Okay. So again, one can think about sort of how to optimally allocate the channels within the cells. And that doesn't have to be in this every cell gets the same number of channels fashion. It can depend on the sort of usage within the network. Okay, so another way of increasing capacity is to split congested cells into smaller cells, and so in terms of equipment, you're going to need a new base station per new cell, but we can maintain the same reuse factor, because as you shrink the cell radius, you also shrink the power, you shrink the cell radius and the reuse distance at the same time. Okay. So, we have, if you think about it, we had our power loss model, so we drop with some factor gamma of distance. And so at the edge of a cell, we're sort of R0 is our cell radius, our power is dropped by R0 to the gamma. Now, if we have our radius there, then we need 4 new cells. But we've also dropped the transmitted power by 1/2 to the gamma. So we have the new cells, we can allocate the sort of same channels within these cells now and increase our capacity. Okay. So our co-channel interference factor is unchanged. Our reuse factor stays the same. But again, each of our smaller cells has the same capacity as our old cell. So again, we used to have one cell with a capacity of n. We now have 4 cells, each of which has a capacity of n. So we've increased our capacity by 4. Okay. And that happens every time we have our radius. Okay. Again, there's limitations to how far you can take this. Obviously, again, you can only drop the power at which you transmit to a level that still gives you an acceptable signal-to-noise ratio. So remember, every time you're shrinking the cells,
you're shrinking the power you transmit at. So you have to... Or, actually, that's not true. Never mind.
Okay.
But every time you do this shrinking, you're requiring more equipment, more base stations.
Okay.
Additionally, as the cells shrink, if you have mobile users, then they're needing to hand over more and more frequently. And this can be an issue. Your handover can take on the order of seconds. And so if your zone is too small, sort of again, take it to an absurd level, then you might actually be through a zone before your handover can be completed. So there's only, you can only sort of split the cells so much, but it is one technique. Okay. So the next two techniques are cell sectoring and microcell zones. And for both of these techniques, we try to keep the size of the cell the same, but reduce the signal to interference ratio. Okay. And for cell sectoring, we use directed antennas to split the cell up into wedges, and each wedge is assigned a subset of the cell's channels. So here we have the three wedges of 120 degrees each. And because of the directionality, we can reduce the signal to interference ratio. Okay. And so if we look at our initial system, we would have said that for any given cell, six adjacent clusters would contribute to the signal to interference ratio. Well, since you have a directed antenna now, not all of the clusters will interfere. So essentially these four clusters, starting from the top and going around clockwise, do not interfere with our central cell here. So only these two clusters on the left-hand side
still provide an interfering signal. Okay. So,
again, we've reduced or increased the signal to interference ratio by a factor of three, then. And, again, as a knock-on effect, the reuse factor is improved. Okay. The price to be paid is that you have more antennas. Again, you have handover within the cell now, potentially, because as you move from one sector to another, since they have their own set of the cells, since they don't share the cell's channels, you have to change channels. And again, since we've split the cells up into sort of smaller channel sets, we've again, decrease the efficiency of use of these. But, again, you have improved the signal-to-interference ratio and the reuse factor, so you have to calculate whether the trade-off is worthwhile. Okay, so as an example, again, we've got this. Our signal to interference ratio is now dependent on two instead of six cells. And so we have a relationship between the signal to interference ratio and the number of cells in a cluster.
Okay. And so if we just put some numbers to that, if we have a signal to interference ratio of 5, for instance, we can see that we have, for the sectorized system, our reuse factor is 4. For the omnidirectional system, our reuse factor is 14. Okay. And so again, the channel set is going to be split among the cells according to this reuse factor, so we get more channels per cell. Okay. Microcell zones is sort of another way of splitting the cells into zones, but here the channels are shared amongst the zones. Okay. Now instead of having the base station in the center of the zone, you have 3 separate transceivers at the edge of the zone, sort of providing coverage within the zone. And so, again, because of the directionality of these antennas, we're going to have a reduced signal to interference, an increased signal to interference ratio. We're going to reduce the number of cells contributing to interference. But now there's note, since the channels are shared, that you don't have the same handover issues that you had initially. Okay. And so finally, for CDMA systems, we see that the signal to interference ratio is a function of, amongst other things, the number of users in the cell. And so what cell breathing does is it seeks to reduce the number of users within any given cell by sort of shrinking or expanding the size of the cell. And again, you can do that by just changing your power transmission levels. Okay. And so the range of a cell is set to be inversely proportional to the number of users in the cell. Okay. And so that means that sort of as more users are in a given cell, the size shrinks, and new users are more likely to be, again, outside of the cell. And even current users will be handed off to different cells. So that wraps that up. So we've seen 3 big topics here. We've seen the basic organization and channel allocation of cellular systems. We've seen how that relates to the number of users you can have in a system through sort of traffic engineering results. And then finally, we've looked at what can be done to sort of improve on that sort of basic design. So that concludes the sort of cellular basics topic. What we will be looking at for the next few lectures will be examples of specific cellular systems, and so we'll start sort of fairly early in the history of cellular systems with looking at GSM systems and then sort of see how they've moved on from there. So we'll take about a 15-minute break now, and then we'll return to look at GSM systems.